Connecting Consciousness Show. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
17th of September, 2017. Here we are. How was your birthday week, Simon?
Hello, JP. Hello, everybody. Yeah, the internet's not brilliant at the moment, so let's hope we can hold a call. Yeah, my birthday's all right. Yet another one. I'm always pleased to have a birthday. Sometimes I get cards, sometimes I don't. So yes, it was lovely. Thank you very much.
So you have your announcement, Simon.
I do.
It's gonna take a little while for me to get in the, as usual, the question list is unavailable to me because of the, crashing. But normally by the time you've done your things, your initial announcements, it'll have, allowed me back in. So, on you go and take your time.
Thank you. I think people might have been aware of the story. I'm the ins and outs on it. It's not a fake news story, a very real, new toxins over the Houston area, allegedly to kill off mosquitoes. And my concern, and I'm sure everyone's concern who lives in that area, is that neurotoxins won't just possibly kill off mosquitoes, they'll get into the food chain. And this is not a fake news story in the sense that it's been by a number of the major news channels, unless they've been duped into it. But it looks real to me, and it's not as mad as it may seem, because we know in Japan they wanted to use the soil from the dump from the reactor to put into public parks and recreational spaces. So some people are either completely stupid or are signed up to this agenda of wiping most of us out. So anyway, I really suggest that anybody who lives in the area writes to their congressman or their senator and actually really says, you know, I'm not going to vote for you if you allow this to happen over the state. All right, so that's the first one. I wanted to talk, obviously, about the attack that we had in Great Britain, Parsons Green railway station, underground station. And I wanted to talk about it, not just because it's an attack, but of the nature of it. I'm sure we've all seen or tried to look at the photographs, and it looks an incredibly amateurish, almost a schoolboy type of device. What's concerning is that lots and lots of people are immediately writing on the media saying that this is a, you know, it's a flag, it's a particular one. The issue I have with it is that I've looked at some of the photographs of the injuries, and for the first time, you actually got close-ups taken by people with their cell phones of the injured, and they look pretty genuine burns to me. So that's the first thing. The second thing, though, is that the ubiquitous pairs of shoes reappeared. A couple of shots posted showing pairs of shoes just sitting in the road by a fire truck, by a fire engine. And I think the only thing I can add to this is sometimes there are genuine attacks which the elite know about and don't try to stop them. Let them go on, and then they claim them for their own. So they will put a signature or a marker on it. So I'm not yet decided whether this is a false flag attack or whether it's actually a real attack by half-baked people, and that the elite have just tried to add it to their score. So that's why on my website I said that, you know, the about 4 hours after the attack, and I posted on my website that I wasn't yet clear, and I'm still not clear as to genuinely who is behind that. Right, that's that one. I wanted to talk about 5G. Satellites are being launched, predominantly from China, though some from Russia as well. The object being that they want to put satellites around the Earth to add or augment the masts to move to 5G. And the difficulty, of course, is that 5G is at such a frequency level that fourth dimensional entities can partially exist within 5G. And I really think that that's a very big concern for all of us, because AI stroke some of this fourth dimensional demonic entity energy works hand in hand, and 5G is like a bridgehead for them. So that's not good, and I don't believe that it's been done for the right reasons. Just to let everybody know that I am actually moving house. Yes, I'm really moving. It should be no coincidence to anybody that I'm moving in the early part of October. I've always felt that big things were going to happen in October, and so I'm moving. I'm not going to disclose my new location. I've never lived in fear. People who know me know that's true, but neither would I put my head on the chopping block. And I've seen the way that the elite are infiltrating what people call the alternative media, what I call the truth movement. Some people call the truth media. I'm going to give an example. I've always supported what's called the Far Sight Group. And in fact, I've plugged them on the show here. I've often said that these remote viewers, to my knowledge, get it right more times than they get it wrong. And I've been very, very supportive of that. I was really saddened to see a clip of the latest rendition from the Far Sight Group, and they introduced the remote viewers they were using, and they were introduced to the audience as your stars. Now that's Hollywood. When individuals are introduced to the community as your stars, they've gone away from remote viewing, trying to give valuable information to people to warn them what's happening, and they are moving towards a glitzy, commercialized, let's make money, your stars. And I was really upset, but not overly shocked, because all of the truth media now is not being attacked as we thought it would be attacked. It's being subverted. I've seen a number of very good organizations where something is working to undermine what they do to get at them. So I'm changing location in October, because I think October is going to be quite an important time. I'll go on to that in a minute. And it won't be possible in the short term for people to visit me. Where I am at the moment, people will just drop in. They just come from miles around, and I don't turn them away. I'll always make an appointment for them, and I will see them. And that's not going to be possible. I'm somewhat concerned about the sort of people that might be turning up on the doorstep in the months ahead. So I'm still going to do the radio show if the people still want me to. But I am not. I'm going to be from an undisclosed location. It's not about fear. It's just about being sensible. I want to talk about October. For years, I and others have been saying that October of 2017 was going to be a big change. About 5 months ago, I started saying that if we think about time as a piece of elastic or rubber, that the elite are pulling that elastic or rubber to stretch it. So in your piece of elastic, the mass, the material remains the same, but it's drawn thinner. So it takes up more space in terms of lengthwise. And they're reaching about as far as they can stretch this timeline. And I have gone on record as saying, if we don't have some sort of incident this October, I will be quite concerned, because it means that those who have the either back-engineered technology or technology given to them will have found a way to alter what is projected to be written into the Akashic records. And what I mean by that is that there is supposed to be an incident in October, which is a fundamental wake-up call to the human race. And clearly those people who have a vested interest in the status quo will do everything in their power to prevent that from happening. Now, they can't stop it, but they can delay it. Whether that's through chemtrailing, whether it's through killing journalists or making people look like they've had suicides, whatever, they will stop at nothing to maintain their grasp on the human race. And one of the ways that they could maintain that grasp for a little bit longer is to prevent any big event in October that's out of their control. Events that are within their control, then obviously they want that, but events out of their control. And we've always, we being those of us who have perhaps had a glimpse of what the future could hold, have always felt that the October 2017 was going to be a situation not of the elite's making. And they're not stupid, and they have vast amounts of money, technology, both electronic and psychic, at their disposal. But they will have seen what I've seen. They've probably seen more than what I and others have seen. So if we don't get a situation in October, whilst people might say, oh, well, that's great, we didn't have to go through that, my view is, well, what is going to wake up the human race? When is that coming? And how have these guys got their hands on a certain sort of technology that prevents what is due to be written into the Akashic? So please keep your eyes on that. Okay. And following on from that, we've seen both the United States and United Kingdom, Great Britain, are about to raise their interest rates. This will be the first time for years and years that both major Western democracies, I'm using the word loosely, are about to raise interest rates. And that's a very big sign that the economic situation isn't getting better, but that the what they call the quantitative easing just isn't working, and therefore they're now going to go back to the traditional methods of hiking up interest. We've seen the British Stock Exchange lose a huge amount just on lows of business on Friday. That's taken a big hit. We see the Dow Jones at the highest level in its history. And I've said to people who told me about business aspects, and I've reminded them, where can the Dow Jones go? Where can it go now? It's the highest it's ever been. It can't go much higher. The only way is down. So, you know, it's a very important thing if people go and invest money. Gold is at an traditionally safe position, but it's at a very high price. But I do believe that people are going to move to gold in the next few weeks in quite large numbers. We'll talk about North Korea. Everyone should notice that it's gone quiet. Not the missile from Korea, that's not gone quiet. The world reaction has gone quiet, generally speaking. Now, what I wanted to tell the listeners is that President Trump has now officially given the okay for a small military action against North Korea. That is why, generally speaking, there hasn't been the huge response that there has been in the previous provocations from Korea. So a missile was fired over Japan. That was deliberate. Japan didn't really respond. The US hasn't really responded. And that is because, a small military response has now been okayed. So please keep your eyes on that one. We haven't really talked about off-planet stuff in the last few months, maybe because stuff on this planet is so demanding and been so busy. But I wanted to talk about the situation off-planet. Many of my other colleagues who are in the truth movement speak about it. And the little bit I have listened to other people, I would agree with that there has been, for a long time we know, an agreement that things can't go on. Something has got to be done. And I just wanted to let everybody know that the clock has run out of time for certain governments to have made an announcement. I lose track of whether it was the third or the fourth or the fifth deal that had been struck between off-planet entities or federations or groups, whatever you want to call them, and major US-led administrations to actually tell the truth. And they sort of vacillated and said that they would and they wouldn't, and then there was a reason why they couldn't, and then a reason why they had put it back. Ultimately, nothing happened. I just want to make it clear now that that's finished with this particular group, which is a large conglomerate of other groups, finally ran out of patience. And as a result of that, what they're actually going to do is to take matters into their own hands. So we get to watch that. And finally, I just wanted to give everyone a bit of an inside thing, really. I had an experience of myself on Friday. I don't normally talk about it these days on the radio show, but this was so fun and so interesting, I just want to share it. Because it's classic in terms of everyone else's experiences. Okay, so it was on Friday, and I was, this is funny, I was just boiling an egg. And so I put the egg into the pan, and it was 7 minutes past six in the evening. And I was just checking the timer, and literally I looked at my watch, and it was no longer 7 minutes past six, but it was 33 minutes past six. So in the space of 3 or 4 seconds at most, I'd lost 22 minutes. Now, the fact that I looked at my watch must meant I felt something. And I had, at that time, no memory. All I remember is looking at the watch, and it's 6 minutes, 7 minutes past 6 o'clock, and then the next minute is 33 minutes past. Now, that's your classic missing time. And I wanted to share that with people, because I haven't shared much of that at all. I did have a bit of a flashback about an hour or so later, and then later that evening, of a very large room with a very big orb. I mean, really big orb. It's more of a sort of a control center. And I also had memories of more than one entity entering into the kitchen in a V formation. There were about six of them arriving in a V formation. So, I just want to make it a bit personal, really, and just say, you know, I'm still getting these things, and more of the same. So thank you very much, and I do hope that you're nourished now, Jane. Oh, I'm Brooklyn.
Okay, Simon, you got a bit broken up towards the end. Is there any possible you can get to a or move the laptop so it's closer to the Wi-Fi?
Can you hear me now? I've just sort of moved it off.
That seems even worse. try the other way. Yeah, let me try calling you back. Let's try calling you back. That might be a better idea. Do, 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 do. Okay, let's try that. And while we're doing this, I'm just a quick station announcement. Nope, still can't get through. There we go. Now, Simon. Yeah, it's not the best. Not the best. Can I get you on the phone? No, you're real broken up. I mean, really. Much more than not intelligible at all. Let me try again. Right, we're back online now. So we've now got Simon on the landline telephone. Away you go.
Fantastic. So let's have a think. I've done all my updates, and I just think I would like to thank people for their very kind donations. Donations have been smaller, but there have been more people. So I've got quite a list. And people have donated everything from just literally one upwards. So I really need to thank everyone for their tremendous support. Thank you ever so much. Kirsten, Sue, Laura, Tina, Elisa, Jim, Shamsa, Alexis, Bernard, Cheryl, Reinhard, Joanne, Neil, Ask Emily, Jackie, Nathan, Chris, Gordon, Imogen, Jessica, Ed, and Offrey, and PFC, and Michael K. God bless you, Michael. That was a really, really handsome donation, and that really helped me to sort a few things out. Ivona, Dan, Daniela, Spirituality, Sharon, Margaret, Gorilla Guy, and my famous lovely Chinese characters, thank you, Alexis, Tim, Cheryl, Naomi, third column now, Charlene, and Susanna, Cherilyn, Sarah, N.M., Jeff, Jean, Faye, Becky, Sheena, Eddie, Tom, Eula, nearly finished, Geraldine, Desmond, Bob, and Vicar Herbs, that's an unusual one. So thank you everybody for being so kind and for sparing what you could. That's been gratefully received. So I hope that you were able to get the updates. I understand we've got a bit of a serious issue with the interference again. So let's go on with the questions then, JP.
Right, so this has taken a little while to get back in, but here I am. Today's first question from CC Austria. Dear Simon and JP, thank you for your shows and insights. My question, what is the energetic structure of demons? Do they have souls? Do they have a divine spark? And what is it that they are made of? From Hazelnut.
Well, fabulous question. Nobody has ever asked me that before. The answer is yes, they do have a soul, because they are created by Source. And anything created by Source has a soul. There are more than one type of demon, and they live in the interdimensional space between the third and the fourth, and they can live in the fourth, but they have a very tough time living in the fifth dimension or higher. So they're generally constrained to interdimensional between the third and the fourth and the fourth. They're made up of energy that's held together by intent. We tend to have bones, veins, arteries, and they are created as part of a pattern, and they are built in a pattern. So in the same way that their bodies are created with intent, so that the energy flows in different directions and different ways around the body. It's a sort of a circulatory system, but it's an energy circulatory system. They are able to pass through objects, and they can then become solid in a third dimension. And that's the bit that many of us struggle to get our head around. How can something be energy, but then can become solid? If you are living in an energy environment, you are created out of energy and you exist in an energy field, some of these beings have learned the capability to solidify or manifest their body, but only in a fourth dimension, third dimensional world. And some of these demonic creatures were originated on the earth. So they never lost the capability to reform or to rephase themselves into a solid matter. So in ancient texts and writings, the demons are portrayed as energy, but they're also portrayed as attacking babies or chasing people and biting them. So we have evidence going right back in time of this duality between these beings to be able to be the smokeless fire, to be the energy shadow beings, but also to be able to manifest into physical reality. So that's basically, I hope, a good answer to your question. Thank you.
Ah, that's all gone quiet. Are you still here, Simon?
I'm here.
Sorry about that. I got a missing chicken. A long story. Anyway. Right. Okay. This is from Manok Choris. You may know who he is, really. Dear Simon, I had a Skype session with you on Tuesday, 12th of September. You stated that I was born with a Pleiadian soul, and that at the age of 12, I had a soul walk-in when another soul from Sirius came in and inhabited my body, together with my Pleiadian soul until the age of 13, when my Pleiadian soul left. You then stated that the reason why I haven't lost my memories from before the soul walk-in is because there was a handover period where both souls lived together and working as a team. Unfortunately, I didn't get the chance to ask why the soul wasn't happy in me. How come a Pleiadian soul didn't work with me? What is it that causes a soul to not work with someone? Also, how come you asked me to keep an eye out for grey or black helicopters over my home? I've come to realise that all the helicopters that fly over my home are either grey, black or dark green. We even had one fly over last night as we were trying to fall asleep around 10 p.m. They all seem to be flying at a relatively low altitude. So, how come a Pleiadian soul didn't work with him? And what is it that causes a soul not to work with someone?
Okay. Obviously, I'm not going to mention any names. I know the client well. He was a really nice guy. This is the wrong angle. It's not couldn't work with the person. Often when we have, you know, we talk about walk-ins, what I explained actually to the gentleman was that generally what happens is that the original soul departs the body and a new soul comes in. And what is usually the occurrence is that childhood memories, well, depending on when this occurs, but the memories prior to that swap are either very hazy or completely lost. And it's very common for people to have, you have a walk-in at maybe the ages of 6, 7 or 8, to have no memory of their childhood at all. But in the rare cases where somebody has a very clear memory, it can be, as in this guy's case, where the original soul maintained in the body for a period of time, and what happens is that the two souls in the body will communicate, and the original soul will pass the information across. It is wrong to think that one was ejected or wasn't happy. This is all part of the deal done before we physically arrive on this planet. It was always going, in his case, to run up to a certain age. It would have its experience. It would do what it needed to do. He would learn what he needed to learn with that soul. That soul would leave, and another soul would come in and carry on the development work, not as a standalone, but in terms of the Palladian soul had done the first bit of work, and the second soul then carried on. So you've got the wrong angle here. It's not, it didn't work out, it had to go. This was always meant to happen. It's part of your development, and it's a positive thing. It wasn't pushed out from you or rejected. It was all agreed beforehand. And so the guy that I Skyped and did the session with, if that hadn't happened, he wouldn't be the spiritual, decent guy that sat opposite me during the Skype. If he hadn't gone through that, he wouldn't be who he was. He was only who he was, very spiritual and very awake and aware, because that had occurred. And that occurred for a positive reason. Right, let's get that clear. Now, he's absolutely right. When I read the energies, I expected, we didn't really talk much about that, but I expected helicopter activity around him of a very large nature. I expected what we traditionally call the black helicopters, but they can be painted grey. I haven't heard of green ones, but they can be grey. When we have people who have a very, very interesting background, then the elite know. And I always say to people, look, if I can meet you and I can detect it, there are bad guys who will detect it. So you're already beyond the list, and you will have had helicopter activity because they are monitoring you. Excuse me. they will be interested in you. So I'm not at all surprised that he has the helicopter activity. That's not aliens. That is the the secret military projects. It's where all where the tax money is going. You know, vast amounts of money. People just don't appreciate, even in our own industry, the truth movement, just how much money is going to these projects. That's why so many roads have holes in them. Hospitals are collapsing. People can't get proper jobs because the money is being sucked out of the system, and to a large extent, the lawmakers don't even have a clue. It's not being presented to them. They're not writing or signing it off. They're just not even getting, it's not even getting that far. So the bike helicopters are an absolute proof positive of secret military projects, psychic projects that are interested in individuals. So I hope that that answers the questions. And I know we only have half an hour for these Skypes, and half an hour for some people just isn't enough because they're so complicated. And this guy was particularly complicated, and I mean that in a nice way. And sometimes just isn't enough time in one session to go through it all. But hey, we've cleared it now, so that's great. Thank you.
All right. So following on, this is the same. I recently had a Skype session with you where you advised me to get rid of my necklace, as it was a black magic symbol which I wasn't aware of. It had been marketed as a symbol of unity. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Uniting all religions into one and uniting all peoples despite their different beliefs.
Yeah.
For many, many years, I've always had a strange feeling of not being alone, that feeling you get when you're certain that somebody is watching you. After our session, I got rid of not just the necklace, but my posters and all the artwork of that symbol and the band. I still have their music, but none of their artwork. It has now been 5 days since I got rid of it, and not once have I felt like I'm being watched. You said that the symbol functions as a devotee, but how exactly does that work? How does having a symbol result in you being an easy target for attack? And this, this is me now. That is a very classic demonic infiltration technique, isn't it?
Yeah.
Having symbols on the album covers.
Yes. This is when we incarnate on this planet, the vast majority of us are good people, and we have no belief that anybody could be evil and covert and do the things they do. We just treat people as we would be treated. And, you know, this is the point, that there are evil, really, really evil people who play on that trust. And that's how they've got themselves into the positions of power. So let's take Hollywood. Let's take the entertainment industry. What they'll do is they'll form a band. The band have generally no clue. They're given emblems, T-shirts, posters. They have no clue about it. They just do what they're told because they're being paid very well, and it's better than working in the 7-Eleven store. And so what happens is that they'll use, just like they use the Beatles in a different way. So they'll use this energy frequency. It's both music and it's cult. And they'll aim at certain ages of the population, and they will use this iconic imagery, which is absolutely connected to black magic, and they will infest people's lives, either through books. I mean, there was somebody who had a book, doing a Skype with someone, and I said, there's something really bad. You've got a book, a black book, and you've got to get rid of this book. I can't see it in your room. But she said, this other client, I've got a moving stuff, and I've got a big piece of wood against the bookcase. So anyway, then I did a Skype with her next week, and she pulled out this book, and she said, is this the one? And there was a pentagram on it, and I couldn't even look at it. And I said, yes, that is exactly the one. Please get rid of it. So unwittingly, these symbols are placed in our lives in the most unusual places. In the Bible, it talks about the mark of the beast, which is 666, and you know, this mark is placed on people, etc. But if you can't go around stamping things on people, what you can do is get them to take it into their home. So it could be on a piece of furniture, it could be on a record sleeve, or a CD, or whatever. And if you have that in your house, although you don't understand what it is, in terms of the universal law, you are accepting that into your house. So we use the word devotee. So you become a devotee of it, which means that they can open a portal at a big extreme. But generally speaking, they will try and connect with these symbols. And this is the bit now where we're moving into to the magic. You have a major symbol in a location. It is connected to myriad smaller symbols. When you charge the central symbol, it can then, like an octopus, put out tentacles to these lesser symbols. You can either try and activate them all in one go, and that takes a huge amount of power. So what you can do is you can activate those of a certain size, and that's why these black magic markers are smaller size, medium size, and bigger size. So they will activate the smaller ones. People who have pieces of jewelry. I mean, I talked about a certain person in the Truth Movement whose manager has pentagrams and skulls tattooed on his body. You know, it's a very common thing. It's fashionable to have pentagrams. And we mustn't get confused with Wicca, because when we talk about Wicca, we're talking about witchcraft. That's not black magic. It can move into black magic, but it's actually separate. So it's not a pentagram per se. It's not this, you know, in itself. It's when it's connected and linked in to a program where an organization is attempting to activate or change people's perceptions or people's values by using, as you said, JP, black magic glyphs or symbols. So that's what I said to that client. And when, from what he's now saying to us now on the show, when he removed them after 5 days or 5 days have elapsed, he felt that the eye wasn't looking at him. Basically, what he's done is he's taken away the windows, he's taken away the portals, he can't be spied on in the same way. So he's learned a lesson that sometimes things that we buy from the high street, from the stores, aren't always very good for us. So I'm really pleased that you listened to my advice and you did it, and even more pleased that you felt the benefit from that. Thank you. Well done. That's great. Thank you, JP.
Okay. Well, I got a corollary question, which is something that we learned about years and years ago, that in the old days when they had black vinyl records, they would take all the records down to a room at the bottom of the record company, and there would be some black magic ritual put on them. And I remember people talking, you know, when they were a child, they looked at the albums that were in their dad's collection, and they could see the demons kind of popping out of this. Have you heard about this? That they actually like charge albums with demonic energy?
No, but what I have heard, and it's interesting, so it'll probably, you know, correlate here, is that certain artists, their albums were taken, and what they would do is scratch, for those people who are old enough to remember a vinyl record, although it's very fashionable now, even the young people have them, when the needle runs off, there's a little space before the paper circle disc, and you can sometimes see messages scratched in that. And I understand from talking to a retired guy from the media industry that what they would do on certain artists is scratch symbols or something in that which was linked to demonic energy. So I didn't think it was that widespread, but you know, if what you're saying has been occurring on large numbers, then it's obviously done in the thousands. But certainly I've heard of them scratching with a needle or a pen or something and carving into the plastic certain marks or glyphs which were meant to be activated in black magic. And the other thing, of course, is that when you play things backwards, occasionally you can actually get something coming through. And this, again, is part of this project. So that's exactly where you would expect it, in the media industry, where, you know, the Illuminati wish to control, they didn't control the military, they control the politicians, the bankers, and the entertainment industry. And then, of course, they went on to control the religion. But entertainment was one of the key aspects. that they wish to control. So, yeah, I've learned something there, JP. I didn't know about that. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, this is something I've heard a couple of times from different sources, but that's what they used to do. Don't know what they do now with digital downloads. They're probably some kind of etheric implant. Okay, back to the questions from Andrei from Slovenia. Hello, Simon. How is the battle for Earth going on? When are the reptilians going to lose influence over our planet? And when will there be any visible change or difference? Thank you for all your help.
Right. It's funny, isn't it? Because that was the last point I was just talking about, our off-planet situation. Although, of course, with reptilians, it's also one planet. I suppose it's a bit of a sad answer, really, but it all comes back down to us jolly old humans on the planet. When are we going to do something about it? Not when is somebody going to come along and say, you know, we're going to help you out here, we're going to save the day. No, when are we going to do something about it? When are we, as a consciousness, going to say, we're sick of this, we're not going to take it anymore? And that will only occur when people begin to see through the lies. As long as the majority of people, as long as 51% of the people on the world are prepared to carry on in the way they live, and they don't want anything better, they're not prepared to dig for the truth, then why would the reptilians or any other entity, why would it want to go? Because it's, you know, stayed the same. In other words, technology changes, but the ruling elite haven't changed. The control system has changed in the sense that it's become more subtle, more covert, but it's still there. You know, in the good old days, a lightning bolt would come down, strike a bush, set the bush on fire, and everyone would go away weeping. Well, that doesn't work anymore, and technology has moved on to such an extent that mind control on the planet now is pretty widespread. So in order to bring about the change, people have got to start saying, we're sick of this, we see through it. I mean, let's be perfectly honest, this isn't going to go down well with many people. It'll go down well with all our listeners, but this wouldn't go down well with people who don't really understand the subject. The vast majority of the people on the planet are paid slaves. It means, if we go back in history, black people were forced to work on the cotton mills, and white people, at the ages of 7 and 8, 9 year olds, were meant to go up chimneys, or 5, 6 year olds were working machinery. So whether you were white or black, you were basically a slave. The difference was the black guys didn't get paid, and the white people got a small pittance. Then they supposedly released all the black people, but we're all slaves. In the sense that we're trapped into an environment, we are paid in a wage, which is then immediately taken away from us to live, to pay taxes, to give to things, and if we don't, we're in trouble. And so this is the cycle. There's no time for people to look at themselves, to feel who they are, to experience and love. I mean, you know, I've got lots of friends who are American and some friends who are Japanese, and they have so little holidays, and this isn't meant rudely, but they'll go around visiting places and they just take loads of photographs, because when they get back, they had their 2 weeks holiday and then they want to spend the rest of the year looking, I went here and I went there and I went there. They didn't actually connect with the place generally. They didn't actually really, really connect because they were so busy trying to pack in as much as possible. And that's what's happening to humans on this planet, and I include myself in that. We are being run ragged. We are being kept busy so that we can't think and ask questions. And that's what the system has learned to do. It's learned to keep people busy. And I just wish goodness that large numbers of people would start to club together and say, we're not doing this anymore. It's happened. If you think about some of the peace movements, if you think about the large numbers of people who were not allowed to do it now, but would congregate on New Year's Eve in Trafalgar Square. I actually attended one of the last ones before the police banned it. Trafalgar Square, I must have been about in the 1980s, and 100,000 people attended to celebrate the coming of the New Year. get 100,000 people demonstrating because a hospital is closed, or 100,000 people demonstrating because such and such a person was thrown in prison when they were clearly innocent? So why will people turn up in their thousands to listen to a pop group? Why will thousands of people turn up to see the year change, but they won't turn up to save a hospital or save a school or fight for democracy? The reason is because they're just about doing okay and they don't want to rock the boat. And when the time comes when people say, look, there are some things more important than my own individual self, we must work as a group, then that's when the balance will change. But at the moment, people are still concerned about themselves, how much money they've got in the bank, whether the football match is on Saturday, where's the bar open, and, you know, will I be able to watch stuff on TV tonight? Now, as long as people are in that mindset, well, why would a reptilian leave the planet? Because he's got humanity exactly where he wants it to be. And that's why I need a big change on the planet. I and others, we need some shock, something to occur, which is programmed to come in on the Akashic Records, which will really shake people to the core and make people say, not just I'm angry with X, Y, or Z, but look at my life. What am I doing with myself? Look at the people around me. What are my values? That's when humanity will then move forward. And until that happens, why should any galactic federation bother to come down here and do all the work for us if they won't go away and we just fall back into the same slot? You know, how many times has that happened where you yourselves, and I'm talking to the audience, have helped a friend? You've helped a friend out. It might be a bit of money, it might be advice, it might be anything. And then 2 weeks later, they go back into their old ways again. Let's take someone who's trying to get off drugs. And no matter how many times you seem to help your friend, you know, in many cases, they just fall back into their own ways. And it's because they weren't ready to change. And no matter how many times you came in to help them, if they weren't ready to change, it's not going to work. When that individual is ready to change, then it can work. And I think that these federations, and they really are true, there are large numbers of very, very positive ETs out there. They are waiting for enough humans. It doesn't actually have to be 51%. They're waiting for enough humans to make that change. They can then come in and say, there is a critical mass of humanity here, which we now feel we can really work with. And that's the moment that will happen in our lifetimes, but not if the elite have anything to do with it. Their whole object is to string this out as long as possible. So it's a long answer, but it was a damn good question. Thank you.
Okay, meanwhile... It's
tea time.
Are you all right? Sorry?
Nearly tea time.
Oh, so it is. Yeah, let's put a tune on.
Lovely.
Got some... All right, okay, let's find a tune and quickly. So how about... All right. Alright, this is a track by Sons of Arca, who's, they're actually fans of yours as well. And, this is called Ancient Temples in the Southern Cape, and it's all about, South Africa and the Abzu and the things that Michael Dellinger talks about. So, Sons of Arca there with Ancient Temples in the Southern Cape. And welcome back to Modern Temples in the Northern Hemisphere. Simon, are you still with us?
I am. Listen, JP, I've got onto loudspeaker because I didn't want the phone right next to my ear.
Of course.
But has that deteriorated the quality?
No, you're good. If you can sit there and you're comfortable, that's good.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. That's brilliant. Listen, I've just been looking on your blog, and it looks like the announcement about me moving and my experience hasn't been picked up. It must have been when it was completely crackled. So I'll just quickly just go over that. Is that I am moving house. People shouldn't be surprised that I'm moving in October. And for the short term, I shan't be announcing where I'm going. At the moment, people can turn up at any time, and they do. And they travel from far and wide to call at the house unannounced. And I never turn people away, and I will always talk to them and see what I can do. I had one gentleman who had a demonic possession and had come from abroad just on the off chance. And he'd gone into a church and said to the people in the church, does anybody know where Simon Parkes lived? And somebody did. And this happens time and time again, where people will just turn up to the town of Whitby and then call into community places and say, does anybody know where he lives? And somebody usually does. But what I was saying was that we're seeing a lot of attacks on the truth movement at the moment. You know, my brake cables went, Dave Wilcox cables, was it Corey Good? Dave Wilcox, I think, cables went. And some difficult, nasty things occurring. So I'm not going to be giving my new address away in the short term. So unfortunately, you won't be able to come and visit me. But this is a necessary precaution because, as I and others have said, the month of October, the few weeks around that, could potentially be quite tricky for those of us who have held the flag up. Can I put it like that? And the other thing I wanted to talk about was, very quickly, I had an absolute traditional missing time experience. I'll just very quickly go through it, where I looked at the watch and it was something like 7 minutes past six. Literally looked away, looked back at the watch. It was then 6:33. And I had, at that time, no knowledge of anything. I literally just hadn't moved. And that's an absolute classic missing time moment. And I had some flashes of memory that came back within an hour, and then later on that evening, some more memory that came back. So the reason I'm putting that forward is that I sometimes get asked by people, do you still have your experiences? And I do. And unfortunately, I didn't have a full memory recall on that one, but I was aware that I'd lost nearly half an hour in time, which to me was about 2 seconds or 3 seconds at most. So I'm just going through that again because it looks like from the blog, people hadn't picked that one up. Thank you, JP.
Well, going back to our questions, because this is quite an interesting one. Draconis, reptilians and homosexuality. Question. Following on from your reply, I want to ask you a sincere but potentially near the knuckle question. However, it's important to me. Given that the Draconis reptilian population is 75% male, the males are physically bigger, the culture reveres physicality and power, and many are rendered sterile, is homosexual intimacy and or phallus worship prevalent in their culture? And so that's the first question. In addition to this, does the general controller, act as a sexual icon figure head for his group? So all reptilians under his authority look to his phallus as their phallus. They extend his energy even though they are sterile, and he channels their energy in rituals where virile prowess is required. Thank you and blessings from Pseudo Cerberus.
Right. The first one is inaccurate. The second one is accurate. The gay angle was created for humanity. If you look at number of groups that have been influenced by them, one of them was the Greek world. City-state of Sparta, where a newborn boy baby was wrapped up in blankets and taken up to Mount Olympus. This is true. This isn't nonsense. It's not BS. And if in the morning, when they went up to the top of Mount Olympus, the boy was dead, then he was never meant to be a warrior. But if he'd somehow survived the night, he was brought down and he would become a soldier. And all of these guys, well, nearly all of these guys, had very long hair, braided them, and they were gay. They still had wives and children, but they were bisexual. Time and time again within the Illuminati, it is absolute pattern for an Illuminati female to be bisexual. Not, you can't say 100%, but 75% of it to be so. The gay connection does not exist in the reptilian world, but it was a trait given to humanity during the hybridization process, because it allows sexual control, and it links in with demonic energy. It doesn't mean, let me make this absolutely clear, it doesn't mean that gay people are demonic. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that you can open certain doors in the fourth dimensional energy, and that was one of the portals that they created. So that is the action for the gayness. The second part about the Lord High King, as he would be, as he would call him if you were translating that into English. Yes, absolutely right, because he is the figurehead for his people. And if you look at the Queen of England, although the vast majority of men and women in England or Great Britain don't revere the Queen, the system tries to imprint the fact that the Queen is the head of the Commonwealth, the Queen is the head of Great Britain, and the Queen is this, that, and the other. So the system is trying to replicate the Draconis hierarchical structure. But of course, humans are very resilient, and they tend to, you know, have a healthy disregard for things like that. Thank goodness that we do. But in Draconis culture, you look up to the Lord High King. The Lord High King not just speaks for you, but his actions are your actions, and he acts for you. So the two-part question you gave me, the first part wasn't wrong, it was just inaccurate, and I hope to put that in a fashion that makes sense. The second part, you are absolutely spot on, and if you know that, because you won't find what you've just written the question, you won't find that in the books, and you won't find that on the internet. I know for a fact, from my own huge experience with these things, that you have had experience with these creatures. You couldn't know what you know, because you wouldn't find that on a book, well, not to my knowledge anyway, or on the internet. So I guess you've had some experience with them. So thank you. That was a really good question. Thanks very much.
Okay. Now, one of our favourite subjects, the blood type and rhesus negative alien DNA.
I thought you were going to say the flat earth.
Yeah, no. Had that one, somebody put that in on Alex Collier's meeting the other day. You know, it's like, if you've been up in space, can you look down and is it round or flat? And he's like, laughs. It's
what
round.
Out of interest, I missed that, of course. I would have loved to have heard it. What did Alex say to that?
Well, you said, you know, it's round, you know, it's just, of course, it's just, I mean, it's one of the sort of been, the questions that have been on the webinars every month, you know. Anyway, hello, Simon and JP. This is from Christy. I hope everything is going well with Simon. I have Rh negative blood type, and I've been told it's one of the rarest blood types in the world, if not the rarest. Where does Rh negative blood type truly originate from, and what can you tell me about it? I've done a little research, and it turns out that this blood type might contain alien DNA. Thank you, guys, and keep up the good work. Well, I just got to say that I've got A positive blood type, and you know, right. I'm about as alien as they come.
Right. My blood mother had rhesus negative, and my blood father had positive. Now, back in those far off, dim, distant days, when a woman and a man with those blood groups had a child, i.e. me, the medical science was such that they would advise the mother not to have any more children because there was a chance that the mother would hemorrhage to death. Now, for young people, this is like, what? Incredible. Now there's an injection or a series of course of injections that the mother can have, which means that that's not the case. And it's not serious now, but back when I was born, that was a real big serious issue. So one of the reasons is blood is compatible, but sometimes it's not as compatible as other sorts. And you can look at some blood, and some groupings are more modern in terms of our history, and some blood is much older. And that's chatting to a guy the other day on one of my clients, and he had the same sort of experience as me. he'd gone in to his, he gave blood fairly regularly, a good thing to do, I guess. And, but they refused to tell him what his blood group was. But he said, well, it's my blood. Well, no, we're not bound to tell you. So he went to a private clinic where he did it, and they still refused to tell him what his blood group was until he stood at the receptionist and made a huge song and dance and a huge fuss. And in the end, they told him what the blood group was. There's a huge a cult, in the true sense of the word, control over knowledge, people having knowledge over blood, because when we talk about bloodline, and people throw this phrase away every day, really, on the alternative news, and the truth media, it doesn't just mean the blood in your veins, it also means the soul in your body. But when you're talking about rhesus negative, you're talking about a certain blood that the off-planeters, and these are the reptilians, although some of them are on planet, remember, say that certain individuals will carry the Rh negative blood because it is a sign that individual has a long association on this planet. And how many times have I made the Jesus statement that you don't put new wines in old wine sacks? That's simply because if you are going to put a soul into a body, and that soul has had some very, very interesting experiences, you do not put it into a standard body. You put it into a body that's been specially prepared. And so, you know, I would love to actually have the records from the Rothschilds or the Rockefellers, and I would love to see all of the maids and the staff and the chauffeurs, and I'd love to look at what their blood group is. And you know what? I would expect the vast majority of them to have Rh negative blood, or at least to have come from their mothers or their fathers had Rh negative, because that is seen as part of the elite group, not by the majority of humans, but by this small elite group themselves who see that. There is a connection. We talk about the rhesus monkey, rhesus monkey and rhesus blood. So what researchers have found over the last 30, 40 years, when interviewing people who they considered to be genuine with stories of UFOs, alien abductions, that they weren't those people that weren't hallucinating or on drugs or making it up, but those that were genuine, they found a very high proportion either had Rh blood themselves, or one or both of their parents had Rh. And researcher after researcher came to the conclusion that they didn't understand it, but they said there is some connection between alien abductions in a family and the blood rhesus negative. So that, I hope, helps. Although it's a question that, you know, comes up often, it should come up often, because it's topical. When you know that many people have Rh blood, and it is a sign and a symbol, even if we don't see it as that, this elite group that has so much control on this planet, they see it as a flag, they see it as a marker. I'm very concerned that hospitals, clinics generally don't like to tell people what their blood group is, and it's this secrecy over blood. Blood is seen as vital. And think about, you know, those people who go to church and then they drink the blood of Christ out of a goblet. They drink red wine. And I don't want to start a huge revolution here, but why in goodness name knows would you want to drink blood? Why would you go into a church and drink a goblet of red wine and be told this is the blood of Christ? What aliens consume blood, I wonder? Right, that's it. That's a good question. Thank you.
Ah, yes, the old blood types, yes. Because I've got A positive, and I've been seeing this, oh, A negatives, they're all these, and these are all that. There's a lot of this, I hope. So, from the blood to crystals. Now, this is from Martin. There are clear crystals, natural, rare, having real triangular marks, several millimeters or rarely a few centimeters long on one of their facets. The triangle marks are visible only under different degrees of light. What do these marks mean for the holder, and are these triangles some kind of memory bank that can be released in meditation with the crystal?
Right. When we're talking about triangles, maybe we're looking at something different here. There are two ancient cultures that use crystals. One is the famous Atlantis, and the other is Lumeria. But they use them for different purposes. I'm not going to get distracted and start talking about Atlantis now, although I'd love to. I have a connection to Lumeria. I'm not connected to Atlantis. I'm connected to Lumeria through the Hollow Earth, although a few Atlanteans did go to the Hollow Earth. And we talk about certain crystals being storers of information, not in the same way as the crystals in Atlantis. We call them Lumerian record keepers. And it's a quartz crystal that has lines. We're talking about vinyl records. And in the same way, these crystals have lines, parallel lines that run very much as if they're encoding information. Sometimes a crystal can grow twinning, or it can grow a pyramid-type triangle shape either inside itself or more commonly outside, as if it's creating another crystal. And these can actually form lines as well and can intersect some of these actual long lines. And if you have a connection to Lumeria, then, and you're meditating, then you can hold these crystals, and you can sometimes make a connection not just with the past, but also possibly with the future, because these records allow you to connect sometimes through to the Akashic. And occasionally the inclusions in a crystal form channels of energy, very much like a freeway or a motorway runs from point A to point Z, then these inclusions are direct energy through the crystal itself, and they can then come out generally at the point, but not always, and then flow round the crystal or through the crystal. And it's a little bit like, you know, you take a magnet north and south and you put it on the old iron filings, and then the two poles would produce a lovely fountain effect at both ends with the iron filings. Well, a crystal of the right sort will do the same. It's not unlike how some of the alien spacecraft and the back-engineered reproduction vehicles operate, because it's not anti-gravity at all. They work with gravity. They don't repulse gravity. They work with gravity. And they create waves of energy that actually use the hull of the ship as its sounding board, if you like. And a Lumerian crystal will do the same, except on the outside it has lines. Some of these lines have no encoded information. They're just literally the lines there. Either the encoding was never placed on it or has been lost. But occasionally you can find a crystal or a part of a crystal that those encoding informations. It's like finding a CD, for goodness sake. That's probably the best way to look at it. And you're very lucky if you get a complete one that you can put in your player and play. Generally, we get bits of them, and we can only play the little bit that we found. So I hope that's helpful. It's the first time I think anyone's asked me a direct question on that. Thank you.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've got a Lumerian crystal that was given to me, actually by somebody who was running CC up in Scotland but has now passed away. Through a mutual friend, this crystal was passed from me. Catherine, do you remember Catherine?
Of course I do.
So I've got her crystal. He gave it to me and said, you know, she said, give it to me. Okay. So, I've got it, and it's been a great friend. It's a lovely crystal. It's about 5 inches long. And a good size, a good one size. And it's got these lines all the way down it, which are like, yeah, like you say, they're like the old fashioned records where if you run your finger down, you get a zzzz. Yes. So, meanwhile, Simon, you still with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, good. All right, so on many places on the planet Earth, they can find rock spheres up to several meters in diameter. I was told not to bring my head near the equator of the sphere, otherwise there's a possible loss of consciousness and possible wipeout of memory. Is that possible? When and who made these rock spheres and for what purpose? Are spheres turned off and can they be harmful? Do they turn on? Right, so rock spheres, Simon.
Okay, I tell you what absolutely is hugely amusing. Occasionally you'll find a nature book or a wonderful planet, and they will show things, and they will show these spheres, and they will say, formed by nature. And they will say, what happens is that the wind, and this is not BS, this is what they tell you, the wind blows really, really strongly, and it pushes these rocks along the ground, you see, and they roll a little bit, and over the centuries, they roll and get round. It's not unlike in the 1930s, there had been a number of ancient stone implements found by professionals as well as amateurs who'd found stone tools in impossibly old rock. Today, the establishment would say that stone tools go back about 3.4 million years old. Well, these guys, 150 years ago, were finding what looked like to them stone tools, maybe at 5 million years old, in Britain and in America and elsewhere. And so suddenly, this was good for the church, because it began to talk about humanity being somewhat older, we don't have to talk about dinosaurs or monsters, we can talk about humans, and the church was quite happy and got behind that. But science, the Darwinian group didn't want that. In the 1930s, there were drawings of these stone tools and saying, this is how these stone tools are made. And then was this, I remember as a schoolboy, I'd been about 10 years old, looking at this textbook of this stone, piece of stone that had slid down the hill. And as it had slid down the hill over centuries, it had been eroded by bits of rock that it hit to make this sort of shape that looked like a stone tool. And so what the establishment do is they lie, or at least let's be a bit more fair to them, and they will attempt to concoct or make up or cobble together something that's half scientific and half fable to try and pass off or explain away something that doesn't fit their own agendas, because to accept them for what they really are would be to push humanity back far beyond what this establishment would like, and it would begin to open up questions about how objects can hold information. So often these stone let's just call them a stone ball, and generally they can be about the size of a grapefruit. They can be much larger, and remember in Tibet and Burma and other countries where monks can stand in a circle around these things, they can actually levitate them with their mind. And these are sort of stones that weigh, you know, many hundreds of pounds. They're circular, they're a sphere, because that is the natural object. That is, you know, the earth is round. It's not flat. It's round. And so this is the natural shape within our third dimension. If these stones have been encoded with information, that's why we have to be careful in Atlantean technology with some of their crystals. If the stone is encoded, then if it's triggered, you could handle one of these stones for a month and nothing could happen. But if you were in the right intent, you held it in a certain way and perhaps a certain time of day, or the stars were in a certain conjunction, then it will release a burst of energy. And it's a bit like an EMP blast. And if your brain, for want of a better word, your skull, your head is within a certain distance of it, then it's like being hit by a burst of EMP energy. And the warning there is absolutely accurate. What it can do is blank out, like amnesia, but selectively. So if it happened, you wouldn't say, who am I, what am I? You'd say, I don't know where I live, or I don't know how old I am, but you would remember other things. So these objects can do that, but it rather depends whether they were standalone or whether they were networked. Now, the round, small ones, which are about the size of a grapefruit, they were networked, and some of them contain a charge and some do not. It's the first time, again, we get a lot of firsts. It's the first time anyone's asked me that question, so thank you.
But who made them?
Right. They were made all over the planet, but they're predominantly in Asia. There are some in the Western world, but they're predominantly in Asia. They were made by humans who were working to a pattern. So in other words, they were given one, shown how to make it. They then made them, but they then were passed on to, let's call it a priesthood, who would then, in the same way as you told us about, you know, these guys taking lots of vinyl records down to the basement and doing whatever, they would then take these in batches and they would encode them. Not black magic, they would just encode them. And then they would lay them out on the ground, and then if you're in an alien spacecraft and you're flying at a certain distance over the ground, either your own mind or the computer, remember these computers are sentient, can actually communicate with the stones. It didn't mean they could hold a conversation with the stones, what's the weather like today, but they would have a little bit like an integrated landing system on an aircraft. It's sort of a dead reckoning navigator. But these stones can maintain a telepathic connection, like Lemurian keeper stones, they can be telepathic. So they were made predominantly by humans who were following a pattern, and then those objects were then given to the initiated, and they then did the special stuff to them. Then they placed them in key locations. Many of them actually are hidden in jungle areas and yet to be discovered. So yeah, it's a fascinating topic.
Yes, indeed. So, Timor Crypto, Bigfoot. Hello, Simon and JP. I know that this question will sound like a big joke, but do you know anything? Excuse me. Do you happen to know anything about the creature known as Bigfoot or Sasquatch? Is it real? Is it the missing link? Is it a proof of genetic manipulation? There is a man called Todd Standing who says that he has proof that the creature is real and that he knows how to track them. But he will only go public with that information if he can get government to protection of the species. And so far, he has no luck with that. So, Bigfoot, are they real? Is it a proof of genetic manipulation? What's the deal with the Bigfoots?
Well, it's on this radio show and many other radio shows, that's not a joke. That question isn't a joke. If you were to go onto mainstream radio or mainstream TV, where unfortunately so many people don't see the value in searching for the truth, it would be derided and it would be laughed at, and you would be seen as a nut. And that is the state of play on this planet at the moment, I'm afraid, which we've got to change. We have got to change this. So they absolutely are real. Of course they are. And like any sensible creature that's more intelligent than some of the elite around us, it's gone into hiding. They were a real native living creature that was part of a hybridization program that was... I know what you mean by the missing link. If we use the Charles Darwinian term, then I've got to say to you no, because there is no missing link. But if you mean, is it something on the way between monkeys and humans, then the answer is yes, except it has a soul. Well, monkeys have a soul, but it has a soul that's a consciousness-type soul with the body. And they were a bit like the Neanderthals in the sense that they lived at the same time as humans, Homo sapiens. And the Neanderthals either were killed off or died off, and so we were left mainly with Homo sapiens. But this group, which are very loving, very spiritual, I'm going to say something now which is going to surprise and shock people, that have a real liking for some form of chocolate. Yeah, that's right. they have a real liking for a certain sort of chocolate on advertise. There's no way, as it stands on this planet, that any government would officially protect them, because to do so would be to accept that they're real. And if a government accepted they're real, then they've got to come clean on every other topic that they're sitting on. The only way it's ever going to happen is if a very spiritual person one day has a lot of money and says, right, I am going to set up a protection zone. I'm going to buy this part of Nepal or Tibet or wherever we are. We won't give the zone away. But North America wouldn't be too bad. Canada wouldn't be too bad. Alaska wouldn't be too bad. And I am going to buy so many thousands of acres or hundreds of acres of this land, and I'm going to employ armed guards to keep hunters out, and this will be a preserve. That is the only way we're going to preserve anything like this. It's when people talk about the Loch Ness Monster, I don't fall about laughing. Why shouldn't something like that be alive? It's not just I want to believe it. It's romantic to believe it. They are real. And it's unfortunately the arrogance of any unawake people who just assume that they're the only intelligent thing on this planet. And we're not. Thank goodness we're not, because we need diversity. And one day, the majority of the human race will say, let's sit round the table with all of these things that we had denied, and let us share and live side by side, work together. But at the moment, we can't do that. So these creatures, of course, don't want to be associated with humanity. Why would you? So many of these people just want to go around and kill them. Anyway, let's just leave it there. So that's a good question. Thank you.
Interesting. Yeah, we used to have a Sasquatch contactee who regularly connected with the show. They're very quite advanced, beings. Okay, so here's a question about diet. Dear Simon and JP, this is from Ellen. What is the best diet for humans? Is it a whole food, plant-based diet? No meat, no dairy, but lots of greens, legumes, and whole greens, and mostly raw food. So, humans, do we have to eat food in the first place? You got any tips on that?
Right. Well, we do have to eat food. That's why we have a digestive tract and a gut and stomach, because we are designed to eat, solid food, in the sense of it's, you can't live on light waves, sound waves. That's what people in higher dimensions can live on. But we are born onto a physical planet, and therefore we are part of the Earth. And so therefore, to be part of the Earth, we have to share connection. If you look at humans' teeth, we've got more grinding teeth than meat chewing teeth, cutting teeth. If you look at Tyrannosaurus rex didn't have any grinding teeth. Tyrannosaurus rex teeth were just for eating meat. If you look at Triceratops' teeth, in the source of the Cretaceous period, Triceratops didn't have any meat-eating teeth. They were all grinding teeth. So when you look at humans, we have these predominantly two fangs, that we have that pop down. But the vast majority of our teeth are designed for grinding and crushing. If we look at the truth in terms of the fossil record, we find that there were two forms of hominid. One was surviving on nuts and roots, and his and her teeth were all grinding teeth. Another form of hominid had been altered, and I'm using the word deliberately, had been altered, and had the canine teeth, the two meat teeth. And these two groups generally wouldn't mix, because one group lived at one type of area, the trees, the berries, and the other lived on the more open plains where it could scavenge meat. The animals, the early emerging humans who were eating meat, their brains did develop faster because of the protein from the meat, but actually it was the marrow in the bones, not the meat itself, it was the marrow in the bones that they were eating that was enhancing their brain. Now, the particular alien group that was hybridizing took both of these traits, and that's what we are now. That's why a human on the planet today is quite happy to eat nuts, as long as you've not got an allergy, and vegetables, but can also eat meat. But we don't need to eat meat. This was a construct given humans. The very first human creations were both meat. This is a human creation. That's part of the alteration program. Could eat both meat and vegetables. But the original mammalian stock, which was the apes, only ate fruit, nuts, and roots. So this need to eat meat has been given to us, and I've talked about it on the show before. As long as humans believe they have the right, and it's perfectly okay to kill an animal and eat it, then a reptilian can say, I've got every right to kill and eat you, because you, I'm only doing to you what you're doing to the other animals. And the education system on this planet is such that it teaches children that animals are not equal to humans, therefore we should eat them. If you have a cat or a dog, that's a pet. So we don't eat, in many cultures, we don't eat the cats and the dogs, because they're a pet. So when you look at a sheep or a lamb or a cow out on the field, the system tells us we can eat those because they're not a pet. And I often say, well, what makes my cat special that it's not allowed to be eaten? Why is that? What is the difference between the cat that lives with me and that lamb that's jumping about in the field? And the difference is that the human society has said this animal shouldn't be eaten because it's either working, it kills rats and mice, or it's a working dog and therefore it's useful, so we don't do that. But these are just dumb animals, these lambs, and they're only bred to be killed to be eaten. So until humans can come to some understanding of what that actually means, then we won't really get advancement on this planet. So there are plenty of people who don't eat meat, and they're very healthy, and they don't have diseases, and they don't have the bloody antibiotics that most of these cattle have pumped in them, so they don't get diseases. And you can live without eating meat and be healthy. So what is a diet? I can't preach to anybody. You've got to do what you've got to do. You've got to find your own spiritual level. But you want to eat foods that are as free from artificial materials that are harmful as best you can. And it's getting harder and harder to do that. I'm just reading a report the other day saying that sea salt now, they're finding absolute minuscule pieces of plastic sea salt. And they've taken, as an independent organization, has taken samples from many oceans in the world, finding minuscule bits of plastic. So even in the things that you think would be okay, there are some pollutants getting into it. So do your best, try to find, you know, like eggs, try and get organic and free range. And the trouble is this is expensive, and people on a low budget can't easily food. That is why the Rothschilds set up a number of vitamin stations around the world. You know, you are an elite person, you're given a code number, and you can go and pay for vitamins, good quality, from these special places that will only work with the Illuminati, and you are paying five times the high street prices. But that's what the elite can afford. So whilst the quality of the food for all of us, ordinary people, begins to drop off, so the elite are supplementing it with their high-quality vitamins. And I've always said, and I know you have, JP, bugs and organisms that are being dropped on us. So, yeah, that's what you need to do. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. Thank you. So, where are we? The best diet. Here we go. Cause of cancer. Omar. According to the brilliant Dr. Hamer, who invented the German new medicine, the cause of all cancer is always an unexpected conflict shock. For example, a doctor tells a patient he only has a few weeks to live. The patient then gets a shock and believes that he's going to die soon. Because of that shock, his brain sends immediately an information to the lungs to produce more alveolus. The biological reason is to have a bigger lung volume so he can run faster and escape death, like a mouse who's trying to flee from a cat. So the cancer is actually a good thing and his body just wants to protect him from this threat. As soon as the conflict is solved, for example, the patient doesn't believe the doctor or the diagnosis was wrong, the brain sends again a signal to reduce the alveoles and go back to normal. Do you agree on this?
Partly. If we were to think about the body as a very, very, very complex coding of information, and if we don't accept the fact that great-grandfather died of cancer, great-great-grandfather died of cancer, therefore I'm likely to do that. If we accept the fact that sometimes things can occur to us that, he used the word shock in his question there. If some things happen to us and that weaken us and we are left open and we are susceptible to it, and the suggestion has been given to us, if the individual buys into that, they can create that belief to be absolutely true. However, we need to understand that the cancer is a real physical thing. It's not just in somebody's mind. It is a real growth that can occur. Colloidal silver is very good for removing physical tumors. Also, there are people who are of a very high psychic vibration who are capable of healing cancerous tumors. But it doesn't really work unless the patient accepts the fact that they have the capability to heal themselves, or working with somebody else, they can heal themselves. And they can repair their belief in themselves and change the way they view the earth. So what I'm saying is that we shouldn't belittle it and say that it's all in the mind. It is a very real physical result that occurs from an energy imbalance. It's all to do with the state of mind of the individual and what's going on around them. I want to be careful, because so many people have physical bodies, they've died of cancer. Most people know someone who's died of it, and it would be very wrong to turn around and say, well, you didn't believe in yourself, therefore, you know, you died of cancer, because that's a terrible thing to say to anybody, relatives and friends. What I would say is that in the state of understanding population, deliberately the pharmaceutical companies kept the level of knowledge very low, because, you know what, we can sell you as many drugs as we can, and if you believe that these drugs might help you or your child, you buy them. Of course you would. You love somebody, you're going to do everything you can to save them, even if it's not going to help. I'm going to give you this true story. People know that I'm very much into cats, and a particular vet was once asked, when cat has cancer and it has chemotherapy, because you can chemotherapy, why is it that the hair of the cat doesn't all fall out? Whereas when a human has chemotherapy, all your hair falls out. What's the difference? And this vet, who I'm not going to say because it gets struck off, this veterinary surgeon replied, and I quote exactly word for word, because we don't overdose animals. Implication being there that humans are overdosed. And another thing, and another vet was a poster up and it was talking about certain things and how they were harmful. And yet, mammals are mammals, and I know that some animals can have something that other animals can't, but if you're a multi-trillion pharmaceutical company and you've made your shareholders rich and your chairman rich, you wouldn't tell the truth, because that would be to completely take away your reason for being. And again, this is part of the process. This is what we need to happen. We need humans to stop relying on bottles and pills to the same extent. I think there will always be a place for bottles and pills. I'm not saying that there will be. But I think that we need to understand that we need to go in conjunction with a complete change of mindset of our health and the health of the planet and the health of any other living creature. And until we throw off the shackles of the stranglehold of humanity, we won't get that balance. It's a really good question, and it cuts to the very core of the control system on the planet. Thank you.
Okay, talking of control systems, this is about Bibi Netanyahu. Hello, Simon and JP. This is from Shani. Last week, Bibi Netanyahu's son posted a caricature. In it are George Soros, a reptilian, an Illuminati man holding Illuminati symbols, followed by three political rivals of his father. Is Bibi Netanyahu one of the bad guys? And if so, why does his son contribute to this to disclosure by posting it? Thank you. And
I haven't seen it. Okay. I haven't seen it. I can't comment on that. What I can say is that there are a lot of people who I wouldn't call bad, who, through association of family members, prime ministers or whatever, carry the family name or the bloodline, and yet they rebel against what they've seen, and particularly young people will rebel. And so they will do things that's not authorized. Now, generally, when they do things that are not authorized, these things are taken down very quickly, because the people in control, you know, just control everything anyway. So I haven't seen it. I can't comment on that specifically. So I'm sorry, but I can only just give you the general answer that I've given. Thank you.
Okay. So now, this is quite an interesting question. This is from Steinau, or Steinau, Austria, probably. I cannot thank you enough for what you do. I would like to know anything you can tell us about the Tesseract our galaxy is supposedly quarantined in. First of all, are we in a Tesseract? And if so, does our incarnate consciousness drive the Tesseract, similar to how human body heat powers the machine city in the film The Matrix? So it's like, are we in a matrix that they call the Tesseract?
Right. Not as you portrayed it, no. I've often talked about the net or the grid around the Earth. So maybe that's my Tesseract. If we understand the Matrix, then we understand that the whole point about people is they provide power in the film, which keeps all of the concept going. It keeps all the structure going. In a way, the human race is being farmed, not just for its energy, but for its meat. And that's a terrible thing to say, but it's true. We talked about the concept of reptilians eating people. I'm going to really shock many people now by saying that some of the biggest trades off-planet are genetics. Their organs and blood. This is actually the trade of currency. It's not gold or silver or anything like that. It's genetics. It's human body parts. The number of people I've met who have been on what we call avatar ships, just like you would go into some place where they were, you know, having cows, killing cows and doing all the things they do. They do that to people. That's the concept that most people couldn't get their head around. You know, when David Icke talked about reptilians in the true sense of the word, he lost a lot of people because they weren't ready to go to that stage. And yet, 20 years on, we can look back on that and say, well, actually, now we are ready to go to that stage because so much other information has come up that it's not such a big leap of faith. But when David sort of brought that concept out, he's one of the first ones to do it, if not the first, or at least the first to publicize it publicly and in a public way. It was too much for people. But it isn't when you understand that it's a control system. That's what we mean by control system. And so one group does it to the next group, and so it passes down the chain. I'd rather you thought of the universe as a genuine creation and a fence or a field placed around it. And we call it a quarantine. The Earth was quarantined, and not just the Earth, part of the solar system, but not all of it, but part of the solar system was quarantined. And if you were of a certain particular race, then if you entered the quarantine area, you would be attacked, and there would be a war fought. And often we see genuine bits of clips on YouTube of bits of metal falling to the Earth, and that is part of a spacecraft that's been blown to pieces. And others who are part of the controlling group can get what I would just call a visa, and they can come here for a holiday. You know, the American military are always hosting off-planet aliens who come here for an experience to see how the world is, to see how humans are. But they are very carefully, you know, monitored and shown around. But they will come here to experience. The quarantine's partly broken down because there have been real serious clashes between the negative forces and the positive forces. And some 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago, a large number of underground bases were decommissioned because positive forces broke through the quarantine and started attacking. And then the good forces put a quarantine over the Earth, which is in place at the moment. And a lot of the portals have been either stopped or guarded. So don't look on humans as powering the Matrix, but look on it as humans powering the empire of those who still hold sway over the Earth. So humans provide the energy that keeps the most negative entities here because they're addicted to it like a drug. That energy does not power the universe. It powers this corrupt, evil group of creatures. But the concept is the same in the sense that one group is sitting above another group. And just like a beekeeper will keep bees in his beehive and collect the honey, so these entities keep humans and collect the energy from them. But it doesn't power the universe. But other than that, you're correct. Thank you.
Okay, so
one more, I think. We've got time for one more, then we'll call
it. Oh, yeah,
right?
Yeah. Okay, here's a good one. Simon, you mentioned it's possible to fly through the sun. Is the sun a portal of some sort? And if so, what's on the other side? Thank you, and most grateful to you both. Connie.
Right. Did I say fly through the sun or fly into the sun? Never mind. White. The sun produces a heat, but not as we are taught in school, university, college, etc., etc. You put on a heating element, or you start a fire and you can hold your hands to it and you'll feel the heat. But heat is light, it's energy, and it is transmitted. So the sun isn't just there to warm us. The sun was always there to provide the catalyst for the change on this planet and indeed the other planets. So it's light energy, its light waves have subtly changed over thousands of years, and that's why, quite correctly, people are detecting a change in the shape of the sun and the color. And it is perfectly possible, if you have the right spacecraft, to fly very close to the sun and interact with it. So in other words, if I was a good alien and I wanted to speed up development on Earth, I would start putting metals, I can't tell you what they are, I just know they'd be metals, into the sun's core. I call it a core, into the centre, because it is a combustion going on there. Because what you want to do is to increase this particular frequency of energy from the sun, because it's that frequency which is changing the Earth, and that's why now the chemtrails are the way they are. They're trying to block out this light, this particular frequency coming from the sun. Final part of your question. I have not been into the sun. There is a portal. I would believe it would be attached to its twin. All stars are binary in universes, solar systems. There's the dark sun and the light sun, and I know that there's a connection between the two. So maybe if you went into one, you would reappear outside on the other one. That's my best estimate. I don't think you could go into one sun and then appear in a wormhole trillion, trillion, trillion light years away. I think that each solar system group has its sun, and I think the two are twinned and connected. If you took one out, it would destroy the other, actually. So I would assume there was some form of communication between the two. All right, so that's some brilliant questions tonight. I'm really, really good. Really, really good. And I'm sorry that the communication's been bad. I mean, just for the record, JP, you were coming through loud and clear on the laptop. I could hear you perfectly well.
All right.
Perfectly well. But I'm really glad that we've got the landline going, because I didn't want to miss the show tonight.
Yeah, you'll hear on the archive how garbled you actually were. Okay, so thank you very much, Simon. We'll see you in a couple of weeks, or is it 3 weeks? Let me just check.
I'm going to be moving. I'm going to make sure I do the radio show, whatever happens. So I don't know if it's 2 weeks or 3 weeks, but I will do the show, even if I'm sort of sitting there with lots of cardboard boxes all around me.
For 1st of October it will be.
Yes, I won't have moved by then. I should be moving very soon afterwards. Okay.
All right, we'll squeeze that one in. Your last Whitby broadcast. Thank you very much, Simon. For the round table, please call in now, and we'll gather the round table together, and we'll get going rather quickly. Thank you very much. This has been Connecting Consciousness.